Hello, my name is Kim Dorman. I am with the Princeton Public Library, where we are today. It is April 3rd, and I'm here as a facilitator for the interview between Kim Marks and Anne Brenner.
I am Kim Marks, and I am the interviewer.
And I'm Anne Brenner, and I'm the interviewee.
Welcome, Anne. Thank you so much for being with us today. Let's start by asking, how did you come to Princeton?
I came as a baby about age 2 with my parents, my maternal grandparents, my mother's brothers, and to fulfill a dream of my mother's in wanting a farm. But we weren't farmers. My father was a businessman in New York, and he commuted to New York. And all of this was done via New Brunswick because that had a train station that was useful. And my mother, impulsive as ever, bought the farm in 15 minutes when she was giving up all hope. I'm thinking she was going to end up in some new house on Long Island. And she bought in 15 minutes and didn't know Princeton was down the road. So we moved in I think, January 1947, and she took a ride 5 miles down the road. Although Orchard Farm is a Princeton address, but we are outside Princeton. And she said, "What is this town?" She joined the Princeton Public Library, first off. And she was off and running, including the fact that it dawned on her that she had to send her children to school someplace, and that Franklin Township schools were notoriously not good at that time. And she had a choice between sending us to the private schools, which were Miss Fine's for girls, and Princeton Country Day for boys. But my mother said, no, no. And she paid tuition for us to actually go to the borough schools. We were still separate at that time. It went to the Princeton Borough Schools. So my brother entered Nassau Street School, as I did in kindergarten. I guess he started in first grade. Maybe he started in kindergarten, I'm not sure. And we continued from there, and eventually there were 4 of us all going to Nassau Street School, which is now 185 Nassau Street.
Excellent. And you were telling me, when we spoke before today, you were telling me a little bit about your experience in Princeton Public Schools and the integration of the schools.
I was probably a few years into the integration. It was probably, like 47, 950, probably 3 or 4 years past the integration. And my experience as a student was seamless and joyful because it started to be a difficult time in my family's life with my father's illness, and it was that Nassau Street School between the principal and my first grade teacher, my second grade teacher, and so on, that encompassed me day by day and let me feel wonderful and thrive in that atmosphere. So it was central to our lives and in every way possible. We didn't know about the integration. We didn't think about the integration. We didn't think about our mix of teachers. They were our teachers. And it was a very solid community for me to be in at that time.
Now your farm, Orchard Farm, your uncles were in what business?
My father put my post-war uncles, not knowing what they wanted to do, into the poultry business. Not a good idea. But our farm was a pre-revolutionary registered farm. It is there today. It is Orchard Farm. And it was a beautiful gentleman's farm with beautiful fruit trees. And then they had the poultry business, and they didn't know what they were doing. But onward, and they built it into a huge poultry business, from 40 to 60,000 laying hens over some years. But that didn't make any difference. The chicken business was still a failing business. And my mother, the generous soul that she had, said to her brothers, here, they got married, take this land, build your houses. And we were on the farm with my grandparents right in the caretakers section of our big house, and my uncles building their houses. And there was 16 of us at, you know, at its peak of, you know, of coming and going, and my house was Grand Central Station.
Lovely, lovely. And so as a student in Princeton Public Schools, as a Jewish student in Princeton Public Schools, what was that experience like for you?
It didn't change my day-to-day experience in any way. I mentioned the story of my being very tense because my mother was going to be the mother to come and explain to my fourth grade class and tell about Hanukkah. And my mother being very irreverent, couldn't imagine what she was going to say. But being a very good cook, I knew she could gloss it over whatever treats she brought. But she made it through, and it was fine. But when I was at school, I was not the Jewish kid or anything. I never felt that. And although after school, I'd stay in town and go to Hebrew school, I guess, from. I can't really guarantee you that if it was third grade or fourth grade on. We didn't have a rabbi till I was probably fourth or fifth grade, a paid rabbi. And once that happened, we were like every other kid. It was Hebrew school and Sunday school. There were volunteers and so on. So at that time, my father, an astute businessman, with the other young businessmen in town and doctors and so on, saw there was a building. It was the Christian Science Church on Olden Street, where the engineering quadrangle is on the other side, where I guess where the Harvey Mudd library. And it was $3,000 or $3,200. And my father said, "You got to buy it." And they said, "We can't do that." He said, "You can't afford not to." And they bought this one room sanctuary that the Christian Science Church had moved out of with hot plate alcove and a place to put the chairs and a coat room, and that was it. And that was the beginning, and they hired, they'd had some visiting rabbis from the university and so on, and they hired their first rabbi, Rabbi Joseph Gelberman. And so like every other kid, there we were after school studying Hebrew. I believe that my brother's class was the first bar mitzvah class out of that. I may be wrong about that, 1956. And then by the time my own bat mitzvah year, they had actually transitioned to the new building, which again, my father said, "You have to do this." My father during that time was very ill and died in 1956. So
was your father's name?
David Copperfield Brenner. And so again, there was another sanctuary exists on Nassau Street, completely renovated now, but the original building is, the structure is there. And that was a big step forward to get that property and then add to that property as the years went on. But it was not just my father, but a engineer, Leonard Heimerling, who served on the school board, Abner Robinson, Benjamin Kahn, Nathan Kazrell, and their wives, the Posners, the Goldsteins, the Epsteins, I'm missing some, but all of these young families, all about the same age, gathered together to make first the Jewish Center happen. And it was a non-affiliated organization that was a welcoming atmosphere for all Jews. It had absolutely nothing to do with faith as much as community. Mm. And then they brought the rabbi in, and then everything followed. But that was the initial idea. And so then we were part of that. And it grew. I remember having a fundraiser at the farm with a barn dance in our barn. I don't know what we knew about square dancing, but I remember very exciting for a six, seven-year-old. it was a joyful time. I remember, more importantly, seventh grade Bible and Fun Club. That was, who had a social event like that with boys? All maybe eight of us, 10 of us maybe at the most. So it was important part. There were, by that time, there were Friday night services, there were Saturday morning services, there was Sunday school, there was everything. And what I do want to say is before we had enough space, when we were still on Olden Street, even I, at my young age, was a little amazed that the Quaker, the meeting house gave us space for, I think, High Holy Day services, maybe. Theological Seminary gave a space for Sunday school, and if you think sitting in those carved big seats with your legs dangling didn't make you feel pretty special, Miss Fine School, I think, gave us space on Sundays. So if you think about the awareness of the community and the welcoming of the community. This was all preceded by a little Orthodox synagogue on Spring Street, which mm-hmm. other people, you know, can tell you about. But this was a change with these young couples, and the plaque is in the Jewish Center now, so their names, for the most part, there's some missing, are recorded. And they made all of the difference to the Princeton Jewish community as you know it today.
Lovely. And so the first rabbi you said was Rabbi Gelberman.
Rabbi Joseph Gelberman. He was a concentration camp survivor. He was pulled out by Europe by a social worker, Dora Gelberman. Well, that was her married name. They married, and she sort of rehabilitated him. He had lost his wife and two children. And he turned out to be a very dashing kind of guy, to say the least, and ended up being, I think, the rabbi at Little Washington Street. I don't have the exact title, in New York. And then he had his own, the old Channel 9 WOR station. He became the listening rabbi. So we have very colorful background. But he was the first paid rabbi, as I remember it.
And what would you say was your most formative experience as a child, either Jewish formative experience or just general formative experience?
I think it was being part of a town. My best friends were two Jewish girls, and they were not friends, but their family experiences. One's father was the dentist in town on Nassau Street at 195 Nassau Street. He shared the office with his brother, who was the ophthalmologist. You can look into Henry Abrams and Einstein's brain a little bit. There's a connection there. But so I had, even though I came in on a bus from our farm, I had this friend who lived on University Place across from the old university store, and they had renovated what was known as the Haunted House, and there were four girls, and I would walk across campus with them every lunchtime. I just felt very part of this town. And my friend Phyllis lived on at 124 Jefferson Road, and my mother or someone would drop me with bicycle. It was a thrill, because being on the farm, I also could be part of the town. And riding up to her father's tea room, Vietz, on Nassau Street, and then going to the Playhouse Theater, which was the best movie theater in the whole wide world, and still stands ranked like that with me, and the Woolworths, and I had a town, I was free. But I also, for other kids, had this magical space called the farm where we just roamed, well, free. I wasn't a farm girl, though. I shouldn't even give you that picture. But we were free because my mother was welcoming, let's put it that way. And
what was your mother's name?
Helen Ephron Brenner, and then she added the Smith after my father died and she remarried. So she's got lots of names. But she was key to all of this and a very lively hostess and, managing four children and always saying it's better to have eight children, one playmate for each, because then they leave her alone. She was fun and was the center of our family and was central to many things while managing a very difficult period of time from the time she was, I think, 34 to 37. My father was so ill. But being so surrounded by family during that time, again, just like being so surrounded by Nassau Street School, I never felt the bumps, you know. I just didn't feel them.
You told me a little bit about country clubs in the area.
My father would have been the one who would have gone from New York to the then burgeoning Long Island scene, where after the war houses were being built and country clubs and all that. And he would have been like, he was the kind of guy that came into a room at took over the room. And he would have enjoyed that. My mother knew that she didn't know what it was all about, but it was not going to be for her. So she started looking for this farm. And so the original question was,
the country club.
The country club. So the compromise was to join Green Acres Country Club, which is now Cobble Creek, I believe it's called. So it is still exists. It existed as Green Acres until maybe 3 years ago. And for Princeton Jewish families, it was not typical to join it. My father played golf. My father liked to enjoy himself, so my mother acquiesced and joined, meaning she would sit on a chaise and hope the lifeguard would watch us and read her book from Princeton Public Library. But we were members. I remember it being a world that I probably could have acquiesced to, but when my father died, we were no longer members. But very few Jewish Princeton families were members. It was much more Trenton and Yardley, and there was a divide. We didn't know these people. They had established synagogues. When the Trenton Jewish families moved out of Trenton, they moved towards Yardley for the most part. This is not necessarily true now. There's a little bit more of a mix in Princeton. So France, like Hamilton Jewelers and the Siegels. I mean, but at that time, it was Trenton to Yardley, and Princeton was here, and Princeton and Green Acres were not necessarily a big draw.
And so to be clear, Green Acres was the
Jewish country club.
Because Jews
were not going to, there wasn't even a discussion about it, join other country clubs in this area.
Excellent, thank you.
Well, let me just add, talking about that, is that these same families, and I have pictures of them, found that in trying to rent at the shore, they learned quickly that Bayhead was not going to be welcoming and so on. So they mostly rented in Manasquan and that area, and then later my mother rented in Lavalette because we went down to the shore every summer. But if that was a blip, it was a minor blip. It was just something you just accepted and got on with. But it did exist. And so there probably was this divide because many Princeton people did have homes in Bayhead. We didn't see it as a divide or a problem or anything like that.
And how would you describe Princeton when you were a child versus today?
Well, obviously it was quieter.
How quiet?
In the summertime, absolutely quiet. I mean, nobody thought a thing of our wandering around. And I think probably the boys had, I was not adventurous, but I could have my bike with my friend at my friend's house and just go all over the place. And no one had us account for our time. It was a quiet summertime. During the year, the students were here. I was on campus all the time because I walked through to my friend's house for lunch. Otherwise, I would have had to eat in the makeshift cafeteria at Nassau Street School. Nassau Street School was an hour for lunch, and if you were within walking distance, you walked home for lunch. End of story. So I got to go with my friend. So there was. Busy campus, and there was town. Princeton used to say about Princeton, and I think this is a true fact, that it had more liquor stores per capita than any other town around. There were very few restaurants, and there was a lot of home entertaining, and I can't think of any restrictions on kids that we felt.
And you were telling me that the status car back in the day.
from my memory and people telling me that the VW bug was, it's not a status car, it was the norm as opposed to any luxury car. Nobody even thought of a luxury car except for my father. My father had different ideas. We're the ones with the big Packard. We're the ones with the big Buick. He loved stuff like that. He really did. He was the one with the cashmere socks, and he loved to dress and so on and so forth. But he was a very welcoming kind of guy, so everybody liked him. It was not an issue, but I think if anybody had the status cars, he did. But when I think about it, I didn't even think about it when I said that to you. Bigger and better for him.
And you were telling us a little bit about the tea house on NASA.
The tea room?
The tea room.
My friend Phyllis's father. And you may be able to get in touch with her, but I'm not sure. Her father owned Veet's, which was known as Chocolate Shop and Tea Room. And he ran it like he was... It must have been his Le Bernardin in his mind. It was a luncheonette, and in many ways, but it was a very useful story. It had stools, it had booths. It was air conditioned in the summertime. It had its special tables up front that he would keep for special professors, and it was wonderful. And I still visit out at Schwartz's Garden Center with one of the people who was a waitress there, and she's in her 90s now, and we have a good laugh. Dottie Schwartz Ragony. Those are the little connections that I, you know, remember so well, that I was a little kid and we were all invited to her wedding. That was so exciting. But yeah, that was a very special. I felt very lucky that what little kid has a friend whose father owns a restaurant, you just go and have something. And they'd save you things, you know. So it was rather charmed in that way.
Now, tell us about Princeton Adult School.
Much later in my life, and unbeknownst to me, I joined Princeton Adult School. And in doing a little bit of research for we worked hard on the 75th, but in one of the, there's a pretty good history written. The adult school was the desire of two women who lived on Jefferson Road, and I think they were, I don't know if they were sisters-in-law. I've got it. No, they can't be. That's not right. I can't think if they were the relations, and I forgive me, I just can't remember. I could straighten it out if I look at back at the history. But they had this idea because they wanted to emulate the Trenton Evening School from Trenton High School. It was the star program around, and they went to the president of the university, superintendent of schools, and the president of the theological seminary and said, help us, and they did. And Princeton Adult School began in 1939 with something like 600 students giving courses from a black seal boiler operator. I don't think that designation exists today, or maybe it does, I'm not sure, to, as we have today, and we can easily attest to, our big lecture series. And that started in 1939 with 2 years off for the war. But they had this vision of these courses and welcoming everybody. Here was the rub. Princeton was segregated in 1939, and that the school was not going to be segregated. So whereas the kids could not integrate during the daytime, in the evening, everyone was welcome. So it has always been an integrated organization, something that they're very pleased that these women had this foresight.
And this was Ms. Schleifer
Mrs. Schleifer and Mrs. Peskin. And their husbands had the newspaper delivery service. And I was in touch with one of the Schleifer daughters, but I don't know if she's still around.
And so your role at the adult school today?
I was administrator, and then I got the august title of executive director, which means jack of all trades. It's still a very, as far as staff is concerned, small organization with three of us. And we manage, and we have been open. The pandemic did not close us. World War II closed us for 2 years, but the pandemic did not. It's a successful organization now with many, many people who have gone through and helped us, board members. It's an unusual organization because we have a huge board who go out and get courses. That is very important. That is the wealth of Princeton Adult School because of the variety of people out seeking courses.
And how long have you been executive director?
Since 19, well, I was administrator, come on. Let's bring it down to that. I started the summer of 1993. A long time. Wow. That stuns me. Okay. My little part-time job that my husband calls, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. But I think we all know that kind of life. So that's not, I don't think it's unusual.
And so tell us just a little bit more about the evolution of the adult school.
Again, it started with classes at what is known as 185 Nassau Street. And I cannot tell you right now what year we went over to the high school. But traditionally, we have been out of the high school on Tuesday and Thursday nights. We are now in person only on Tuesday nights till, you know, we have to work our way back from the pandemic. We are giving many virtual classes. But I, for the sake of our 85th anniversary coming up, was doing a little research and to find out, you know, the steps along the way. We started giving English as a second language in 1976. I was not with the organization then, but I still think it's rather amazing. It's an area where we can give scholarships. It's an area that we take great pride in doing well. We have lived through all sorts of things, like giving computer classes when the kids have absolutely undermined every computer in the high school in a night's time. I have known some wonderful high school helpers. I have known some wonderful staff at Princeton High School. And I think what the thrill was when Frank Shamil said to me last spring when I met him, he said, "It's a wonderful community organization, and you are welcome. This is a community building." It was the first principal that ever said that to me, by the way. But it was just, you know, suddenly it dawned on me, you know, that the recognition that we have quietly in the community, including two obituaries 2 weeks ago, one person who had served as on the board, and the other person who somehow amazingly taught adult tennis in the gym, putting up makeshift nets. You know, I mean, we've done it all. We tried everything. And here's just hidden there, but both families, the fact that, not hidden, it was that the adult school and the adult school, and it comes up in these quiet ways, but we're not a noisy organization. We just ply away at trying to give people experiences. And I think that we, to this day, have accomplished that.
How do you think that growing up in Princeton influenced the life that you lived here?
Influenced the life that I lived here. I knew I was very lucky. I was academically, I think I was given opportunities that I didn't know the rest of the country didn't have. We started French in third grade. Remember how long ago that was? We had algebra in eighth grade, Latin in eighth grade if you qualified. We had academic opportunities that were astounding when you think about it. And we had special moments. I didn't know that Prospect Garden was not Dr. Dart's garden. I thought it was always going to be his garden because we were invited to, at that time, the president's house was Prospect House, and we were invited to run around his garden. And Thanksgiving, the day before, we'd all bring our canned goods. We didn't know exactly who they were going. It was going to, and each of us would walk up to the front of Princeton University Chapel. There we were. I mean, you know, we were talking about kindergarten through fifth grade, you know, at the chapel and singing. We gathered together. I didn't know that all towns didn't have experiences like this. The university always played a part in our school lives because, being where our location of our school. The other thing I do want to mention about the schools is the building that is now the Waxwood, and which apartments, that was my, what was known then as junior high school. Again, another seamless transition. That had been what was called the Negro School. And that became the junior high school. And our principal was Mr. Waxwood, who was black. And again, there was no transition or change or questions or like that. This was our school life. And again, seamless for me as a student. And some of the most, I hope that other experience and my schoolmates, my black schoolmates, feel the same way. The ones I see, we, you know, we still have joyful memories. But I just think about the opportunity that I had, and that you can imagine when my mother remarried after my father died, and my stepfather had these orders. We didn't know what orders were. He was a veterinarian in the military. To North Africa. My mother said, "Oh, let's see, where am I going?" And next thing I knew, I was not going to Princeton High School. You could not have stood being with a 13-year-old with that many tears coming out of her. I mean, that's how important it was to me to be part of this community and part of the school system. 13-year-olds can do a lot of good crying. But anyway, it was, to me, pretty magical.
And so you came back to Princeton. What was it like raising a Jewish family in Princeton?
Well, there was raising a Jewish family and being surrounded by my family. I guess it's the same thing. I think I did very traditional things with them as far as the Jewish center and Hebrew school and the bar mitzvahs there. And I had a wedding previously at the Jewish Center, so I was completely enmeshed. A friend and I wrote the Hadassah newsletter, and I was treasurer of, what was that? I guess it was Hadassah at the time. I was very immersed in it at the time. So, you know, I did all the things that, you know, young families do at that time. It has grown so much that I almost don't recognize it. But
the Jewish community,
the Jewish center, as you know, such. But it was. I just fell back into it. I mean, I knew what was available, and someone had, in my absence, kept it all going. Whether it was B'nai B'rith or Hadassah or the Jewish Center, and Hebrew school and Sunday school and all the things that my kids said, oh, do I have to go? Like we all did. So it was here for me.
And when did you move into town? From the farm into town?
Well, actually, I'm trying to think. I've been married and we were away. I mean, I was away overseas during high school and then in Texas, and then I was in college. Then I was in Virginia and Maryland and all that. So my family was back here. And then in 1981, our farmhouse burned. This was tragic. This was Grand Central Station to many. This was, and it was just one of these terrible fires that may or may not have been arson as we look back at it now. As we piece out the history at the time, it was just the loss of family. Nobody was hurt. And as my mother said, it's just things. And when she looked at me and when she got back to my house, early morning in her robe and a coat she grabbed, it was freezing February, and she said, "Give me a bra, give me some makeup. Let's go shopping." She was very practical about that loss. So she suddenly was in town. My brother was in town. My uncles, my grandfather was gone. My grandparents were gone by that time. My uncles were still on the farm in their separate houses. So that was a change. Suddenly she was in town and basically stayed in town with a few dwelling places after that. And so that changed things with the oh no, what am I talking about? I'm losing it. She rebuilt a house on the farm. My brother rebuilt it for her. Because it, what happened was she was living in town, and my younger brother, who was rebuilding the house, was killed in a car accident. And that was probably, talking about formative or the turning point. And do you see why I blocked it?
And what was his name?
Richard Joseph Brenner. He was killed at age 29 on Route 27 when he was going to see the house he was building in that place. And then she ended up finishing that house. So she did go back to a contemporary on that very foundation. And so she was back there again until my stepfather died. So I block things I don't want to face. So that then she was back in town when, after my stepfather died. And so, again, we were close in proximity. But during my first marriage, when we were away, we came back to Princeton and settled back into Princeton in 68, probably 1971. And I've been in Princeton ever since, on Olden Street, right where the Jewish Center was. And now it was a big move at the time for me to move into the township. I can't tell you what that meant. You just had a borough way of thinking and a township way of thinking, and making a move into the township was a big deal. So I just said, well, the kids need space, I'm doing it. So, and that brings me into the Carnassus Park area, which we had talked about previously. But I'm going to let someone else tell that story, I think.
Okay. And what other memories would you like to share?
I don't want, and this radio silence is no good. I have covered a lot of my notes.
Do you want to tell us about these photographs that we'll be adding?
Yeah, I would. They're a mix because they're our picture, my pictures, and then for Alfred Kahn, his family, my family, his family. But these are the kind of summers with all the people that I've been mentioning, the Jews of Princeton, of these young families. These are all beach pictures, but as you see, they're definitely 1950s. There's Debbie, there's Anne, it's my father, and Ellie Posner. They had a farm in Hopewell, sort of unusual. They were really farmers, not like us. And they had a farm in Hopewell, which was interesting. And we were with these people all the time. There's Leonard Heimerling, who was, I believe, he may have been the first Jew on the school board. I think Barbara Vilcomerson will tell you about her mother being on the school board, which will be of great interest. I seem to have more beach pictures than anything else. This is Meyer Goldstein, who owned Beats. I have a picture of him and his wife. Where are they? That's the two of them. My mother and father, and they went up to New Hampshire or something for a trip. Our parents didn't seem to go away without us. Those days they seemed to stick around.
Lovely.
They must have been just this one time. These are pictures of our non-farm farming. I guess they got the hay. What 5-year-old's holding a pitchfork? It's his little brother eating rocks in front of. But it truly was a beautiful farm with, if you see the corn crib, mm-hmm. and we had a. There's another picture. This is the farm after it was added on to. We had our own pond. If you look closely, you can see Orchard Farm labels on the big egg crates. So we did actually sell eggs. There was a big egg route.
Lovely.
This was probably my brother's maybe third grade birthday party at the farm. When we tried to be farmers, this was our cow named Bubala.
Bubala the cow.
Yeah, well, this was our smokehouse, which was from the 18th century. And my brother, who was not from the 18th century. I have a lot of pictures. This is another thing. This is Josh Goldstein, who was a retired rabbi, mm-hmm. whose family was the Vietz tea room family. And this is Green Acres.
Oh, lovely.
Just, country club thing. And it goes on and on to the fact that this is third grade Mother's Day present in front of, this is, if you notice, this is 185 Nassau Street. If you look at the base of this, and there's a little calendar underneath for tear off. And then it went all the way up to my son's college graduation with the Able Bagel mascot coming. Well, nobody else had that at college graduation. I don't think he was terribly pleased, but parading across to him. But the point is that there was another business down the line on Witherspoon Street from all the things that I hope that, you know, he'll have a chance to cover. I grabbed what I was hoping that could be really organized, but you know what, these pictures are never organized enough. And this set will hold because they're the Kahn family pictures, which I think you will want, it will be informative too. And I will let you, you know, you can hold those. I'm trying to think of what I'm missing of my friendships, my family, the adults who knew us so well, the teachers who were so caring in my life, the growing Jewish center. But it was, as I look back at it, what could have been tragic with my father so ill for those years was still in my memories, pretty special. So, it was, and that's why to this day, when I walk into the library where we sit now, my first library was Bainbridge House. And I just did my last embroidery for the Interwoven Stories project. I rushed it because I said, I can't let that project close without my doing that little picture book room. It was the size of a very small walk-in closet for some people. And it had a little table with four chairs, and it was magic to me. And my mother had grown up Yiddish-speaking, Lower East Side, and once she learned English by the seat of her pants at elementary school, and she learned to read and found out the library was free, it opened up a world to her. So to her, the public library was an unbelievable experience. And I will say, for Princeton and for me, that library was freedom, too. It's just amazing. You may want to look at the Historical Society. There's some pictures of storybook groups, and I'm in one of them, and I think in this god-awful hat I had in this picture, I think. The library was, you know, a block from my school, too. So that library was a particularly special place, as inadequate as it was. I love that library. I love the idea. I went from the picture book room to the fiction room and the nonfiction room, and then the Stern librarian with her date stamper and pencil. She's scary, but she was in the end kind, and to the point where I actually had my first kiss in Princeton Public Library in the fiction section, which was sort of away from everything, up some stairs and away between the S and T's. Okay, that's talking about childhood. Well, it is part of my childhood.
There's
memories in Princeton. Certainly is. So I hope I'm being really, really, really fair in the assessment, but I'd love to have my brother sitting right here giving his assessment, you know, because we didn't have the same childhood. Sometimes I think we didn't have the same mothers. you know how that goes. But I'm the one telling the truth.
There you go. Well, it sounds like from your memories and through your eyes that Princeton has always just been a lovely place.
It has been a special town, and I say to my grandchildren, you don't understand, they are here, that what Princeton is compared to other hometowns in the United States, that your town is something remarkable. And they're having the benefits of that right now and going through the schools. And my younger grandson is actually running a film club under Sue Conlon, Stop Motion Films Club. How many kids get that opportunity? You know, and so the opportunities to me continue. Just checking my notes. I really think that I, if you have more questions. Oh, I do want to tell one more thing.
Sure.
I do. Our elementary school, Nassau Street School, was right next to what is now Thomas Sweet Ice Cream. But that was Mr. Cleve Warren's candy shop, Penny Candy. I owe my time in the dentist chair to him, I think. And he had, as I remember it, you know, he had sort of wild white hair. Well, so did Albert Einstein, who would wander by. Mr. Warren was much more important to me at the time. Einstein would just wander by. And there are some pictures of the Historical Society. You'll see my father and Leonard Heimerling and some others doing fundraising for the Jewish National Fund. And those are archived there. And there was a wonderful exhibit at the Historical Society probably 10 years ago where I was so shocked to see the picture because I had never seen it before. But we accepted that. I mean, you know, it was just... But the candy store was marvelous. I can't tell you how terrific it was with his stale penny candy. Again, and right across the street was another wonderful thing in Princeton for kids. And I memorialize this in my first work for Interwoven Stories was my block of Nassau Street that I could navigate as a little kid was Cox's with a peanut roaster right in the window. It's just amazing. And the aroma of peanuts when you got out of school roasting away, just amazing. And where PJ's was another spot we could go to. It was called Castania's. And it had low stools with a long, well, my child's view, long counter. And on a summer day, to get a frosty chocolate malted there or my first vanilla Coke, it was another amazing experience. And the Garden Theater existed there, so I had my Garden Theater. I like the Playhouse. The Playhouse Theater you must look into. And then the library, and then Castania's. I mean, what more could a kid want in one and a half blocks? So it was amazing. And then straight down was Woolworth's, which was full of treasures, and Beats two doors down.
Lovely.
The Playhouse on Palmer Square. That was a world.
Well, Anne, thank you so very much for sharing all of your memories with us today. We really appreciate it.
Well, I enjoyed being able to share it and knowing that some of this will be passed on and that someday somebody may listen and say, oh, really? Let me find out who Miss Godley was, Miss Wilcox, as your, you know, my kindergarten teachers, or Mrs. Griggs, because that's Griggs Corner right across the street, as my first grade teacher. And her house was right there, and she took us all there to Griggs Luncheonette for... Nobody asked whether we could eat hot dogs or not. Sat us all down, got us hot dogs at the counter, took us to our goldfish pond and back. That was first grade. I mean, so, yeah, I'm finding, as I dig, thank you for listening, because I'm finding more and more magic as I dig a little deeper. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.